Hello and welcome back to Millennial. I'm now here with, we're going with the name Kiwi Off-Gridder, but his other name is Mark. And he is a guy who has gone some distance to making himself self-sufficient and independent of the system, as it were. So, Mark, welcome to Millennial.
Thank you very much for having me.
Okay, and the idea here is to inform people, educate them on what is necessary and why they might want to go off-grid, how to go about it, and what has worked for you. And I think this is something that is very specific because everyone has different talents, everyone has different circumstances, and everyone is in a different country. So it's going to differ from one person to the next. But you were in my Telegram chat group. This was, I don't know, about 10 months ago. I think it was just after the last millennial. And this topic came up of going off-grid. And you reported that you'd had quite a bit of success with it. And that made me think, oh, it would be good to hear from you so that you could give other people pointers and ideas for how they could do this themselves. So thank you for agreeing to do this. And would you like to briefly tell people your own story?
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, if you look at the titans that have come before me on Millennial, I'm not some sort of top figure in the dissident right community or anything like that. I can't link you to any of my podcasts or channels, and I'm not Papa Jared Taylor, but I have sort of been reading the tea leaves like most of us have for quite some time, seeing the general quote unquote progression or degeneration of the way things used to be, and kind of cottoned on. It's sort of a combination, I guess, between being interested in self-sufficiency, prepping but without being a total nutcase about it. Circumstance for me, it was sort of the COVID lockdowns and all that hoopla was the real catalyst for just saying, you know, if not now, when? This stuff is getting crazy. So I bit the bullet and left my hometown, moved to the other side of the country, purchased some land and a dwelling, and for the last 2 years have been just setting up shop, really, getting stuff ready to sort of depart and end reliance on the big boxes, big box chains, the system, as it were, quote unquote, as much as possible and within the bounds of reality. You know, as you mentioned, everyone has their own circumstances, unless you're Curtis Stone or someone else flush with resources and connections and time, you can't do it all at once and you can't do it all. But I think my perspective is that probably one that's relatable to most people, and hopefully this helps people that, you know, want a bit of inspiration or want to know that it can be done if you're just a average kind of suburbanite, urbanite who decides that living in multi-culti hellholes isn't the way to be, and you want to just have a change of scenery.
All right.
As much, I guess it's as much a lifestyle change as a protest, in a sense. Yeah,
I can see what you mean. And I think that it was COVID that really started a lot of people thinking there are actually a lot of reasons to go off grid. There are a lot of reasons to literally to do something as grandiose as detaching from the system. I think a lot of people prior to that assumed, well, the system is, and by the system I just mean government, democracy, commerce, the usual stuff. I think a lot of people assume that it's livable, it's sustainable. I might not like some of the stuff that happens. I might not like some of the governments or whatever, the politicians, and I might have complaints about certain political issues and social issues, but the system isn't malicious.
Yeah,
and I think that COVID really changed a lot of people's minds on that.
Yeah, and it really is a combination of factors. If we lived 60 years ago, when our societies were much more homogenous with our people, you could have dealt with this. But it's the mass immigration, it's the crushing financial system, it's the COVIDs, it's so many things. It's the anti-white narrative that gets pushed through white countries now, in a sense, and that stuff just makes you think, yeah, maybe the system is against us. And it's hard to then kind of suspend your disbelief to the point where you just don't, you know, register any of this sort of stuff. And you're kind of left without an option So you say, yeah, what is the option? And it's getting the hell out of there and finding like-minded people and then doing the homesteady off-gritty trad life sort of thing. I mean, it's not like it's new. Our forefathers did this for time immemorial, but as we all got sort of herded into cities, those old ways are lost a bit, and there is definitely sort of a reinvigoration of it, particularly of younger people wanting to reconnect with nature and the basics and have clean air and not get molested on the street on a daily basis. So, yeah.
Indeed. So if someone, let's go through this kind of sequentially. If someone were thinking about this, what is about going off grid? Let's say someone in their 20s. Let's say someone in their early 20s, just for the sake of make it as broad a canvas as possible. Someone in their early 20s thinking about going off grid. What is the first thing that he should do, and what is the second thing he should do, and so on?
So the first thing, I mean, there's realities, right? And most of that hinges on finance. You're limited by your available capital. If you have minimal capital, then you'd be looking at things like land share or rentals rather than, hey, I'm going to go and buy a big block of land and just plow everything into it. So you look at those options. You'd assess how much money you have to spend. You'd assess whether or not you need to maintain some form of employment. I guess the bright side of COVID was that people were able to work remotely on a mass scale, and that's what I currently do still. So I balance things out by maintaining employment, but slowly reducing my reliance on the shit I used to buy, because I can grow it, build it, make it myself. So that's been helpful. If you don't want to be tied to your prior job, can you find new employment at your desired location? Is there a desired location where you are? Do you have any sort of arable land where you'd actually have to consider moving? Are you comfortable moving? Are you comfortable leaving the things you know, you're familiar, family ties or friendships in neighborhoods? Some people are much more happy to do that than others. Some people are sort of more stoic and lone wolfy. Some people need to move as a group. Again, that would be tied to maybe your connections or your just, I guess, level of self-reliance already. So there's a lot of things to think about. But I think once people kind of have a rough idea that they're like, yeah, here's the spot, I've weighed this up, let's make it happen. And then, are you partnered? Do you have a family? Are you doing this fully solo? I'm doing this fully solo. I guess those big picture questions. And then it's really, can I sustain this financially? So you've got to make some sort of a budget, or at least ins and outs, right? Like, one of the big mistakes I think people make is to drop everything and pretend that they're going to create a utopia and plow heaps of money and time into it and realize that it costs that up and they're now underwater. Whereas if they'd been a little more circumspect, taken their time a little bit, done things gradually, had a longer forward plan, they would have seen the progress slightly slower, but it would have been manageable. And they wouldn't have had to kind of upend everything they knew to chase the pipe dream. And they'd be really disappointed and they'd become a sort of anti-ruralite and have to move back to town to manage debt or something and then inevitably eat the bugs, as it were. So, yeah.
Yeah. So I guess a key question here is, and this is something that probably a lot of people wonder about, I don't know if you'll be able to give a definitive answer, but given everything that you now know about going off grid, what would you estimate is the minimum amount of land that somebody should be looking to buy in order to sustainably go off grid?
So I reckon there's two main factors there. Do you want animals? Or do you not want animals? There are some people who, I don't know, maybe they're hardcore vegans and they just want the plant side of things. You can get by with a lot less land, and I'm saying half an acre. I've seen some phenomenal homesteads, and like everyone, I assume, is relatively aware that YouTube is replete with homesteady, off-gritty, permaculturally, minded channels that have just huge success. But half an acre seems about right for plants only sort of thing, small scale. Grow your veggies. And then in that context, it's like, what level of comfort do you want? Some people don't mind not having a lot of power. There are genuinely people that want to live off a wood burner and that kind of stuff. And then there's people who don't want to give up so much comfort and they need more of a dwelling and they need to consider things like power and water and all the rest of it. But even on half an acre, if you have moved away, I'm assuming that if you move out of the kind of popular areas, your land cost will be lower and even your dwellings will be a bit cheaper. So on that amount of land, you can actually do a pretty good job of things. And if you're comfortable without, you know, everything fancy, as it were, but make your own solar arrays and make your own batteries if you want to, harvest your own rainwater rather than being on a supply, that sort of stuff. That's sort of the number people sort of look at, half an acre to an acre. If you want cattle, to have your own source of red meat, then from, like in my instance, I have 10 acres and I have about anywhere between 6 and 8 cattle at any given time. And that's comfortable. They don't overgraze the land. They don't pug the land up.
Just before you go into that, I want to show people what half an acre looks like. So here is something I've just found on the internet. Apparently that is half an acre.
Yep. It's not a lot. Yeah. Right. Half an acre isn't a lot of land. And it used to be a reasonably normal amount that a sort of a subdivision or my parents' generation would have been on just as a matter of course. But now everything's sort of being chopped every which way into townhouses, and it's very difficult to grow stuff in these sort of more dense sort of dwelling areas. But yeah, half an acre is not a lot. If you have reasonable soil already, or you can make your soil, soil is not difficult to make, just takes a little longer, and you arrange your plantings sensibly using permaculture as an example, or even just your rows, you can get an awful lot of produce on half an acre. And if you didn't want cows, you can still have chickens on half an acre, and chickens lay eggs, and eggs are delicious and very full of good things that you need. And chickens also have a role to play amongst your, you know, your fruit and veg, as long as you're careful, you don't let them run amok and destroy it. They do turn the soil over, predate on things like, you know, bugs and worms and that kind of stuff. So if you arrange half an acre well, I think that's not too demanding, and it can provide you with a fairly large portion of what you need, unless you're accustomed to caviar and eight course Indian meals at your local, you know, mall or whatever. Yeah.
I think that an issue here, obviously, is you also need a building to live in. I mean, I'm guessing that the land, a half an acre, is not that expensive. The issue is, what are you actually going to live in?
Yeah, where the context of comfort, what are you accustomed to? What is your situation? One stoic-ass, semi-hermit, post-druid male, perhaps, can live in a pretty small area. And not need much. If you've got a wife and kids, then that changes quite dramatically. And then it becomes every case is different. You know, do you have neighbors? Do you have a communal sort of situation? Is there a pre-existing dwelling? Do you need to build something? Can you move something? Are you handy? Are you a builder? Versus do you need to keep your job to pay someone to build? And that's where there's no definitive answers. And, you know, sometimes it's sort of the buy the worst house. What do they say? Worst house in the best neighborhood, or the opposite, to make your money go where it needs to go in terms of a dwelling. Because the dwelling is something you don't really want to, you don't want to skimp on a dwelling and end up with like moldy lungs because it was just a horrible place to be. You do need a level of comfort unless you really are tough as nails, I suppose, would be my take from experience. Like, you don't want, particularly if you're a young guy, you don't want to be bringing back your future shield maiden and be like, hey, check out my piece of dirt. Please raise a family here and pretend that you're happy. You know, like, you got to be a little bit realistic.
Yes, I was just looking at prices there. In Britain, there's one thing I just found there was £85,000 for 2 acres. So that's four times what you're saying is a minimum. That's interesting. You know, that's like, I guess we've been talking about what, 20, 25, maybe £30,000 for half an acre, I'm guessing. And obviously that will vary from place to place, area to area. But anyway, that's worth saying.
Yeah, and that's the issue, right? Like, all real estate is local. How far are you willing to go? How far can you, you know, justify going? There's a YouTuber called Dutch Farmer Marino. I think he was living in Holland and then France and somewhere else. And he uprooted and went to Portugal recently. And he's kind of repeated what he was doing in Central Europe there, or Western Europe. And he's done it in Portugal because it was cheaper and it was just out of the way. How game are you? How much risk do you want to take on? How comfortable are you living far away?
Yeah. So if that's without animals, that you could have some chickens there. So what if you want to have animals and, you know, rear so as to live, you know, a carnivorous lifestyle?
Yep. So in my experience, I put 2 cows in the freezer per year. So I get about a year's worth of, like, literally organic grass-fed beef per year. And I probably have more cows than I need, but I will go through them in time, or you can sell them. So it's a couple of cows a year, and 2 cows, rough sort of quantity of land, about 2 acres, which isn't heaps. And sheep use less. Some people like eating quails, eating crow, I don't know. But cows are kind of the big ticket item, I suppose, in terms of, well, cows and steers and cattle in general. You could do goats, which use less, but, you know, back to my circumstance, I have 6 to 8 cows on 10 acres, but that's not all in paddock. The whole block I live on is about 10 acres. And so they probably graze off of about 7 acres.
Okay. I'm just going to show people an example of 2 acres. So that is quite a lot. As I said earlier, it's in Britain, there, that is available for £85,000. So something to bear in mind. Does this look right to you, 2 acres?
Yep, that looks about right. Yeah, I mean, you could put deer in one of those paddocks. And again, depends on your climate. How fast does your grass grow? Does your grass grow at all? Do you need to sort of amend it, your soil? What's your kind of precipitation regime? Yeah, latitude, longitude, that kind of stuff. It all counts, climate zones. And so that's why everything's so locally specific. But I mean, people grow produce and raise animals all across the planet in some very harsh conditions. I suspect that places like New Zealand, the UK, are fairly mild in the scheme of things compared to, I don't know, Mongolians who have to literally move their yurts around throughout the year and deal with -60 and just dust and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
Yeah. So someone did say earlier, isn't the whole of New Zealand off-grid?
Yeah, actually, we just got this new thing. I think it's called a wheel. Like, it's all the rage, the wheel. I mean, yeah, wild technology. So we're catching up, but we're pretty much off grid at the ass end of the world still. Yeah.
All right. And someone also said that apparently woodland is roughly £15,000 an acre. T.S. Fro said that. Thank you for that information. That's it. These are in Britain. I'm using British prices because I'm just Googling from Britain. So that's what it's showing me. Yeah. I think it's...
Is that like sort of forested area, or that's kind of like like an agricultural block that's been turned into some sort of plantation, like a woodland pine area or...
I don't know. I don't know. But these are obviously prices that people would have to look into themselves. I just want to give people a notion of what's involved here, the financial outlay and also the skills involved. So we'll get to that, I guess. Before somebody even starts doing this, before they buy the land, what should they be brushing up on? What things do they need to learn?
I think the plant side of things is fairly learn as you go, a little bit of trial and error, and green fingers on YouTube can help you. I think it's more the structural maintenance, and if you're willing, you know, electricity, if you can do your basic wiring, do some basic building, carpentry, I feel like those skills, and in my experience, have noticed that those skills are far more useful than, hey, I know how to graft a grape, or, you know, create some crazy hybrid peach apricot delight. Like the really practical stuff, which is why you see trades-minded people doing this sort of thing, because they can survive out there without having to rely on external contractors or other people to come in and just keep shelling out money to get things right. You know, basic fencing is really important if you have livestock, obviously. There is nothing worse than your cows running down the road and hitting a vehicle or just disappearing. You know, so and it is basic stuff, but to be honest, if you've never had to string a wire or tension a wire or put a post in, it probably feels a bit daunting. There's levels of quality, right? Like there's a good fence and then there's a fence that looks like it's probably going to kill somebody.
Well, yeah, and this is why I'm trying to get people to be aware of this stuff beforehand so that they know what they're taking on. Because I think a lot of this is, and you kind of said it yourself before we went on air, people talk about doing this, they want to do it, but they're intimidated and daunted because they don't even know, they don't know the skills they need. They don't know even what they need to know. So
yeah,
they can't find it out.
Yeah, that is very true. And if you're not rurally minded to start with, like if you just didn't happen to grow up on a farm or close to animals, it's very, very foreign. I'm probably somewhere in the middle. Like I'm not a farmer by background. My parents and family were not farmers. But I've always been fairly hands-on and kind of nature-minded, so always out and about, and I guess I have a natural affinity for this stuff, but I'm not, you know, an electrician. I'm not someone that has a tractor and that can just put fencing in. But I learn quickly, and I'm probably slightly autistic, so I take time to learn and really dive into things, and yeah, I don't do well with half-assed, I guess. So once I set my mind to it, I just keep doing it until it happens. And I guess everyone's variable in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, well, see, this is why I want people to be aware of it in advance. You know, what are they going? Because you know, the worst thing would be to go in for this and then discover, oh, actually, I'm not up to this. As you said, I'm now overwhelmed. I didn't realize it would be this difficult. I didn't realize all the stuff that I would have to know. Obviously, a lot of things can be learned on the go, as it were. But I think it's better to be forewarned is forearmed.
Absolutely, yeah. And then that's also a function of community. If you move to a place that's sort of already set up like this, you'll be amazed at how helpful people are. Whereas if you go way off grid where there is no one for literally days, it's a different proposition altogether. Like where I am, it's reasonably far out, but there's enough people here that do a similar thing. If you were stuck, you could go for a long walk, knock on a door, and someone could help you if need be. So that's very different to people that go and live, I don't know, like way out the back of the Appalachian Mountains and no one would hear them if they were dying, sort of thing.
Yeah, I'm looking for more examples of land so that people have a notion. Here's another one. It's 1 acre for 100,000, but it looks like pretty good land. But I'm not sure whether to put the photos up. This is something that, as I said, people are going to have to just research it themselves. But obviously, yeah. I think the key thing here is, and we're talking about, you know, a guy in his early 20s making this decision. A key thing is you are going to need money up front, quite a lot of money. I mean, it's not something that you can do as a NEET, for example, someone not in employment, education, or training. You're kind of fucked. You've got no resources. This kind of thing is something for, if you're in that situation, this kind of thing is something for the future. What would you say about that? A guy in his early 20s.
Yeah, I would agree with that. So I think in that context, you kind of need to get your feet in where you can, find the spot you want to be in. And if it's, you know, because there is a lot of land out there that does sit kind of dormant, or some old farmy lady would love a young, you know, invigorated guy to come along and be like, hey, I would like to do XYZ here. What can we work out? And to be honest, there are people who have got thousands of acres that just sit there, and they would probably be absolutely stoked if someone came along and said, hey, I've got the enthusiasm, but I can't afford this. Can I work? Can we do a work share sort of thing? Can I just borrow an acre or whatever? Can I do your landscaping? Can I look after your animals and learn on the go, that kind of thing? And again, locally, contextual and specific. It all depends, sort of, you know, the old adage of it's not what you know, it's who you know, does apply in some capacity. Having said that, where I moved, I didn't know a single soul at the time, but now I've, you know, integrated into the community pretty well.
Well, you can't be that autistic then.
Yeah. I got a winning smile despite being a bit of a spurg. Yeah.
Well, this is a crucial thing, actually, because people might think, I think a lot of guys are attracted to going off grid because they think it will be the sort of Mad Max self-sufficiency, complete independence, and I can do everything myself. I can stand on my own 2 feet, which of course is a very appealing concept. But like so much in life, social interaction is actually key to success. Would you say that's true of going off grid? I mean, yeah. I think that's probably a bit of an exaggeration, but what would you say?
No, I would. I would agree with that. I think the romanticized, you know, version of it is literally that, like just wandering out into the bush, like it's The Walking Dead with a crossbow, eating whatever you can find or some variant of that, and just saying goodbye to kind of everything. But we're not at that point yet, I suppose would be my point. And there's no need to get so extreme that's your kind of, this is my out, this is my option. It's just saying, fuck all this, come get me, feds. I'm going to go and, you know, set up some booby traps in the jungle or wherever you are.
It reminds me of a meme that I had ages ago. Let me see if I can find it. I've got quite a few memes about feds, but there was one that was especially amusing, and I can't see it now, so I don't want to stall the conversation while I... Ah, here it is, just to lighten the mood temporarily. There it is.
Yeah, spot on.
Okay, here's the question. And by the way, if there are any questions for Mark, just put them in the live chat so that I can, because I won't come up with, you know, I won't be able to think of everything myself, because this is quite a big subject. Actually, one thing I should have asked you is how long ago did you do this? How long have you been off grid?
Only 2 years.
Right. Okay. Mm. Okay. But obviously in that time, quite a lot of problems will have come up and you'll have had to find solutions for them. So if people do have questions, please post them in the live chat. I'll try to get them. Or if you, even better, if you can put them as a super chat, then I'll definitely get them. But I'm going to try to keep an eye on that so that I don't miss any. But one question that's already been asked is, where does your main supply of water come from?
So I have 30,000 liter tank, which I harvest the rain off a shed into. And that's my main source. And I use that for pretty much everything.
All right. And does that get processed in some way, or is rainwater reliable? I don't even know that.
Yeah. So for potability, for human consumption, you do want to run it through some sort of filter. And again, it depends where you are. Like down here in little old New Zealand, everything's pretty clean still. And unless you contaminate it by being a bit silly or neglectful, you can actually drink rainwater, which is great. Whereas if you live somewhere where you've got, I don't know, like bad metals getting into your just atmosphere in general, and then it ends up in your supply, probably don't want to be drinking that on the regular. It's fine for irrigation, but you just kind of need to sort of separate a bit out that you want to be drinking yourself or cooking with or whatever, versus kind of more general purpose, which is why people use grey water systems quite happily on plants, but you probably wouldn't use a grey water system to put in the jug and have a cup of tea.
All right. Well, what, when you say grey water, what other kinds of water are there? I mean, this terminology is new to me.
So grey water is recyclable or like wastewater out of your like laundry system.
Right. Okay. Okay. Yeah. What other kinds? Is that just a name for? Okay. That's just a name for that. All right.
There's got to be other names which probably escape me. I mean, there's septic supply, and if you have a septic tank, then that can also they have what they call a discharge field, where the water that's kind of left out after the solids have all settled out, that gets kind of spread along, you know, your gardens and that kind of stuff. It's low enough in nasty things that it's good for your garden, but you still wouldn't want to drink it, that kind of stuff.
Okay. Yeah. Someone's saying, isn't there loads of bird shit on the roof?
Yep, which is why you have a filter.
Yeah, I thought so. And then someone else is saying ceramic filters can deal with that.
Yep. The tech options these days are pretty remarkable.
Right, okay. Yeah, this is something that the Woodlander has mentioned, that he does use modern, equipment to do some things, like a generator and I've forgotten what else. Some kind of water purifier thing. See, this is what I wanted to talk to him about this last year, but we ended up getting waylaid into talking about art college. And then this year we had a specific thing to talk about. So I never got to sort of interrogate him on all of this, but I think we did go into it somewhat. But
yep.
I would like to hear from other, like a variety of people who've gone off grid because I really think this is a very good idea. Now I've not done it myself and I want to be open about that. But I think it's something that probably a lot of people should look into. So I want to try to get representatives of it, you know, people who actually have done it and know what they're talking about. Yeah. So,
water you can boil. It does come back to as simple as boil your water. And then you've got gravity-fed options. So you'd sort of section away a portion of your broader supply, and then you'd run that through a gravity filter. And in the gravity filter, you could put like some really fancy arsenic/fluoride carbon type filter system and have them in, you know, Fiji mountain water tier quality. And you can get that anywhere as long as you run it through the right filter system. And you don't need that much for personal usage, which is the great thing. If you needed large volumes, filtering that amount would be difficult, but you really don't need that much on the day to day.
Yeah. Okay, here's a good one. There have been several questions posted already. Please keep them coming so that I don't run out of questions, because as I said, I'm not an expert on this. So I don't know what people need to know. I'm in that position myself. Padfa asks, do you circulate crops to maintain the soil, and how do you harvest?
Yes, I do. I make my own compost, and I actually get spent coffee grounds. So I have a connection with like the kind of the nearest town cafe, and when I go in to civilization, I bring back large volumes of spent coffee grounds, which I either put straight into the garden or into a compost and then take it out a bit later once it's broken down. And that's like a phenomenal source of nutrients. And I've found that I haven't had depleted soils. I haven't had bad sort of growth spurts in certain plants. And even though the climate's been a bit variable in terms of like sun hours and rain and all the rest of it, everything in my raised beds has sort of been on steroids since I got set up, really. So that to me has been a bit of a key. I try to do no-till as much as possible, and that's not disturbing the soil. But yeah, with a degree of rotation in there, but so far I haven't had too many issues to the point where I've had to like let something go dormant for a year, and then put something else in like a cover crop to sort of recycle nitrogen or carbon back through it and all the rest of it. It's been okay just to layer on every year.
Okay.
With my larger paddocks, I do harrow, which is where you spread out the cow shit in an even fashion. So that's basically just fertilizing, but naturally. And I try to use as many like recycled or cheap materials as possible. So I just chain together a bunch of tires, and you just drag that behind your vehicle, and it actually creates a quite luscious cow shit paste, which if you time it with the rain, it just washes straight into the soil. And this season just gone, like we're in the middle of summer now, my pasture grass is like going wild, and I attribute that to fairly diligent livestock rotation and harrowing, because nothing else has changed. And where I am, it's sort of upper old river valley sort of soil, so quite stony, very free draining, and typically doesn't retain like a really sort of dense humus layer, like not particularly nutrient rich in general. Things just kind of like wash through. But I think that with my kind of additions and diligence and on pasture management, it's paid off. So I make hay, so I rotate the livestock through what I've got 4 or 5 paddocks, and then I save one large paddock sort of from early to mid spring till mid summer, let the grass grow really long, get that cut for hay, then I have a store for winter, and then put the cows back through it or the cattle back through it.
All right, and then here's a key question. How do you, hold on a second, I've forgotten the exact wording. Where do you get your electricity from? Can you live comfortably with it, or do you need to ration it?
So I have a solar array. It's about 5 kilowatts. I don't have to ration during summer. In fact, the way my system works, there's potential that you could tie it back to the grid and earn a credit. But I haven't done that yet, just because of the inverter I use. In winter, yeah, you have to be a little more circadian and try and live with the light a bit more, just because you haven't got as much illumination and irradiance.
Yeah, I mean, this was something that came up with the Woodlander, that solar panels are now much better than they used to be, like 30 years ago. I remember when they first appeared, and it was, they seem to be improving that technology all the time.
Yeah, I mean, the standard panel used to be roughly sort of 90 watts. Yeah, and now they're up to 450-watt panels that last for a long, long time and all the rest of it. So your bang for your buck on solar is definitely improved. And they're still not, I wouldn't say that they're cheap still. There's still a bit of a barrier to entry, but it's a lot more accessible than it used to be. I guess, you know, your bougie off-gridder types have got Tesla power walls in their dwellings and small solar farms, and they're fully self-sufficient, whereas some people just have a couple of panels that run the basics, maybe a generator, like a backup generator as well, which I don't have. But you know, if you're going full doomsday scenario, you probably need a backup generator, because if the power itself went out and you had freezers full of, you know, meat, they wouldn't last too long if you had no electricity. So there's, you know, there's layers of redundance, like redundancy that you kind of think about, and again, it's all sort of tied to cash and level of comfort. That's kind of what that's the theme I sort of have been able to key into over time.
Yeah, and that relates to something that I was going to ask you. How much time is spent on, when you're living this lifestyle? Yeah, obviously, in a city, for example, or any normal dwelling, people don't really spend much time on, people's time is almost entirely spent on either working, or it's leisure, or it's sleeping. So how much time, when you're off grid, how much time is spent on just surviving, on looking after the means of your survival?
So for me at the start, it was a lot. It was like, because I work still, basically all my spare time went to getting things set up and tending what I had put in and the animals and all the rest of it. And that was a slower process because I was learning. And I purposely have tried to make it less maintenance burden over time. So, you know, you're putting in an orchard, you're putting in 60 trees. So every one of those trees needs a hole filled, it needs watering, it needs mulching. But as it becomes more established, you don't have to do anything apart from perhaps a seasonal prune. And that actually makes a huge difference when you've got 60 trees to think about. I was fortunate to bump into an arborist, and I know in America they have this thing called chip drop, where people, like arborists, will just come and drop their mulch, their wood chip, at your place for free. That doesn't really happen here, but I got the same deal out of a guy just because he needed somewhere to put mulch. And there's this, and I'm sure people have heard of it, it's called the Back to Eden method, where you basically just like pile up 6 to 10, maybe more, inches of arborist mulch and wood chip into your orchards, and that breaks down over time and feeds the trees, and most importantly here, retains moisture, because we have quite severe summers. So if you've got a kind of a built-in irrigation through water retention or moisture retention, by going that route, it saved me a lot of time. And so I've found that now I do have a bit of leisure time, and, you know, I've got the animals on their rotational kind of cycles, and I'm not constantly tending to things all the time. There's little busy periods like spring planting. You got to look after your chickens. They always need sort of new water, and you got to check that they've got enough sort of pasture to roam around on. But those are fairly short sort of discrete activities. You just kind of build them into your cycle of, you know, routine, and then it's the unexpected stuff that might take a bit longer, you know, like a leak somewhere or bad fencing. Like I had a flood and it knocked the back fencing out. So that was a right shit show. And then that was kind of like, you know, weekends taken up getting it all sorted. But at present, I've got a pretty good balance, I think. Like I don't feel exhausted or overwhelmed doing the kind of life stuff required to manage the place here. And I think that that's a real consideration in terms of morale, particularly because I'm here by myself. If you've got a like-minded partner or group of people that are doing it, you're kind of going to egg each other on more easily. But if you're just like, whoa, this is really tiring, it's cold, or it's really wet, or it's really, really hot, and I've got so much to do and everything's slipping and I'm not getting the results I wanted, and it's actually costing me money, that will send you back to global homo very quickly, I think. So a bit of forethought and planning and planning a design probably goes a long way. But yeah, my key point is that it's taken less time over time, and that's been a good thing.
Yeah. So there's going to be an initial flurry of activity to get the place set up, get the things run in. But then over time, hopefully things will begin to take care of themselves. I mean, that's an intelligent way of going about it, clearly.
Yeah. And that's why things like permaculture are worth looking into, like food forests and that kind of stuff for your plantings, because you don't have to worry so much about pest management if there's a sort of a natural system and they're doing it, or with things like, yeah, back to Eden mulch systems. Because watering 50 trees takes a hell of a long time, but I haven't had to water since I put them in. You know, I had about 3 months of just making sure they weren't running dry. But since then, all of my fruit trees have been growing like crazy. And, you know, they say you need sort of about 3 years before you start seeing crops, 3 to 5 years. And that'll be next year for me. And most of them already have fruit now. And that's 2 years in, not quite 2 years in.
Did you plant those 2 years ago?
Yeah, that was one of my first. So there's one school of thought which says live in your new location for a year and don't plant anything. So you get a really good idea of where the light lands, what your north and south, how they play out, what your rain system and seasonal cycles are like, and just to understand where the wind comes from, all that kind of stuff. But for me, it was like, well, the longer I wait, the longer I'm going to have to wait for returns in terms of trees, like produce trees. And I'm at a relatively southern climate, so I get all the stone fruit. I have peaches, plums, pears, nashi, apricots, cherries, that kind of stuff, which need a decent wintering period. And they all do well here. So I thought, yeah, just go for it, just balls to the wall. So within 6 months of showing up, I had either sourced purchased, grafted, whatever, all of mine and put them in to the dirt. And that was when all my weekends were like mulching or managing lawns so they didn't encroach upon them until I had all that wood chip and that kind of thing. So I went pretty hard, I would say. I went pretty hard at the start just to get it in. Because I was sort of probably a little bit like, this is it. This is the big one. This is what we played for, you know, like this is the Mad Max scenario with all the COVID stuff, which didn't really come to pass in a big way. But I guess it did for some people. But it felt like the right thing to do at the time. And it still feels like the right thing to do now, because even though this kind of major scaremongering and, you know, potential food shortages may have alleviated somewhat, the quote unquote grip of the system is still coming, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better overall when you look at like the consolidation of food supply and the tracking and the tracing and all the other crap. So I still feel sort of vindicated in jumping right in.
Definitely. I would say so. I mean, they're not letting up. The COVID thing is, the pandemic is obviously over, but the grip, the new grip that they achieved on society and on people's rights and so on during that time has not been loosened.
No, and now you see it transferring into the climate side of things and all the rest of it. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's probably going to increase. So on the matter of solar panels, do you get snow in the winter?
You get a light icing here, maybe twice. You definitely have notably reduced sunlight and sunshine hours here, but we don't get like, you know, northern Canada or all parts of the States or the heavy blankets, which will leave you covered in snow for days. So no, I don't have that problem, thankfully.
All right, because there are some people talking about solar panels, and one person says they last for many decades now, but then another person says, remember that solar panels covered in snow equals no energy.
Something correct. Yeah, I mean, look at Texas. Far. Yeah, that was that whole fucking debacle of, hey, let's shift everything to solar or even wind. And then when you have horrible blizzards, you have no power whatsoever. So again, local context is important.
And then someone else says, and they cost a lot to set up, and in 10 years' time, you will get a very big replacement bill. Which seems to contradict what the other person said, that they last for many decades.
I think you'd be really unlucky for a system to last 10 years. Most are warranted, at least here, for like 20 plus.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
All right. And I think there was another question about... did I ask the one about electricity?
Yes.
Where you get your... Yeah, right, okay. That's fine.
Yeah.
Okay. There are people posting more stuff, so I'll get to that in a minute. Monty Fontaine says, great chat, lads. Cheers. How close is Mark to becoming self-sufficient? Obviously, you'll still need to buy coffee and sugar from the store, but how long until you can grow all your essentials?
So for me, essentials, I reckon about 2 years, maybe a year and a half to 2 years. I'm pretty frugal in that I don't actually drink coffee. And if push came to shove and I really wanted to just like stick it, I'd go out and make a blackberry tea or something like that. And I have my own blackberries or a pine, something like that, pine needle tea. But I understand that people like coffee. And so there's no way I could grow coffee here. It's just not a thing. I'd have to import that always. And so, yeah, again, local context, but I mean, I have unlimited beef. And, you know, variations of that, like steak and mince and pastirma, schnitzels, sausages, patties, like all of the red meat. I also fish. I'm not too far away from a river. I trade eggs or sometimes red meat for like lamb with some people up the road. So when it's up the road, it's like a few k's away, but local people. So, and I grow all my own leafy greens. And once my orchard is online in probably a year or so, like I already have tons of plums and apples, but I don't have the full variety of, I don't know, like apricots and pears yet. But I suspect I'm a year or two away from that. And to my mind, like that's kind of the basics. And that's all, you know, if you're looking back in that kind of keto, carnivore, ancestral living sort of vibe, that's kind of what people ate, right?
Yeah. Sorry, there's a really interesting comment here by Trying to Stay White-Pilled. Guy called Edible Acres on YouTube also comes recommended. He trades his vegetables with a local organic grain mill. So he gives them vegetables, they give him grain. He then soaks the grain in water, which produces free organic sprouts, free chicken feed for life.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There is a local farmer's market not that far. And there are people doing sort of microgreen setups, all the produce you can imagine. And there's a lot of just barter that goes on. You know, they're the people that are like, I'm paying cash forever if I have to pay anything, you know, no more digital stuff. And they really try to preserve those old ways. And there's mycologists, people that do all the crazy mushroom stuff, all sorts. So it really is like limited by, yeah, your, I guess, imagination, level of work ethic, and climate. Climate does dictate a lot. Like if you don't have a good growing season or you don't grow certain plants in certain areas, and you can't consider that sort of thing. But, you know, there's grow houses, there's tunnel houses, there's all sorts of people with fantastic setups, sort of prolonging the natural cycles, I guess, like just because they have a greenhouse or something like that.
Yeah, the thing about bartering is very interesting because, obviously it's wholesome and old-fashioned, and I think people like that. But also it circumvents the possible problem that someone pointed out, CBDC out next year, the biggest threat that few are talking about, the central bank digital currencies. I mean, obviously you want ways to survive without partaking of that system.
Correct. Yeah. And that is the big thing, that it's a big unknown in a sense, like what level of impact will it actually have? Like, are they, people say, oh, they'll track everything I purchase, and if what I'm purchasing is not on the on the good boy list, then you can't purchase it. Like, just an instant decline. Like, will it be that serious? I don't know. I mean, I assume that if it got that bad where they regulated individual purchasing options to the point where they just like there was like a sanctioned list of approved goods and services, that there'd be people burning down buildings saying, well, this is it. This is the step over the line too far. But I don't know. I don't know how serious it'll be. But I don't like it either way. So.
No, it's ominous. It's worrying. It's something that cannot, it's not going to improve life.
No.
The question is, how much is it going to ruin life? Yeah. How much is it going to, Padfa says, bartering will become massive when the CBDCs come in. My prediction. I think you're right. I think there'll be a black market. I think it's going to be quite strange. It's going to be quite interesting. A bit of a change for a lot of people, because a lot of people just won't want to be, they'll want to minimize their involvement and dependence on that stuff.
Yeah.
On that whole system.
If you look at the way sort of things happened with COVID, small businesses went under. The consolidation was massive. So if all you're left with is Bill Gates' trademark soy slop or whatever version of, you know, Beyond Meat is around, and that's all you have, then you're going to have people saying, well, hang on, this ain't for me. And Johnny up the road grows XYZ and I do this, and let's just step outside of that system as much as possible. And yeah, that's kind of the way it seems to be playing out anyway.
Yeah. Someone said, fruit trees are my favorite thing because I'm lazy. Dig hole, fill with good soil, water in, wait. Enjoy fruit for life. That's literally it.
Yeah, quite literally. And maybe avoid aphids or shit that eats your fruit. Or, you know, there's things like netting because birds go crazy for fresh fruit and all the rest of it. But it really is that simple. And it's kind of strange how we've just kind of like departed from that like so much.
It is. It's a very strange thing to think that you can do this thing, you can plant this tree, and then it will just do this thing for indefinitely. You won't need to persuade it. You won't need to pay for it or anything like that. It just does the thing. So you don't need to have a subscription to it or nothing.
Yeah, it's a very different way. If it's outside your front door, you don't even have to go to the shop to get it. You know, it seems so simple. So I guess that's why I tried to make good on the idea. Yeah.
Okay. There are some others. I think you answered this question indirectly earlier. Someone jokingly asked, do you have a big titty trad farm girl GF?
Trad harem. Yeah, I'm trying to combine the best of Islam and Western traditionalism.
Okay, well, that's that question answered. And then someone asks, do you have satellite internet?
No.
Right, okay. All right, and someone else asks, and you might, I don't know if you'll want to answer this question, but...
Oh, wait, do I have it or is it accessible? Sorry, is it available? Yes. Do I have it? No.
Right, yep. Okay.
Sorry.
Okay. Yep. And someone asks, are you earning money somehow? If not, how is medical care and pension paid for, etc.?
Yep, so that's what I'm doing. I'm still working.
Right, yep. Okay. That's what I thought.
Yep. The intent is to be able to decrease the amount of time I need to spend being a wagee and offsetting that with what I can produce.
Yeah. And this gets to what someone asked earlier, is how far are you from being able to do that? I mean, obviously 2 years is not a long time. I wouldn't expect you to be completely independent. But I mean, is that something that you want, to be literally just be able to live and exist on your own land?
I guess if it was... at least here, we don't have no-go zones and we don't have Calais camps and we don't have Detroit. So general life isn't that bad, quote unquote. The New Zealand political system and the mindset of a lot of New Zealand people is kind of sickeningly liberal. But day-to-day life isn't so bad. You know, like there's no imminent risk like there is in some places, like, just wrong place, wrong time, it's over, to the point where you need to be like out of there. So I kind of like the idea of maybe 70 or 80% DIY versus the remainder getting from the system or having to deal with the normies. And I don't think I'm that far away from it. I guess I was a bit later on adopting all this sort of stuff, and if circumstances could change, if I decided to have 10 children and needed more. But yeah, I don't think I'm that far away from it, just because I've gone pretty hard and I tried to get something that was reasonably functional in the first place, in terms of, you know, having good acreage and a shed or two. That kind of stuff helps.
Yeah. Somebody says, and I think this is very much a skeptic, says, off-gridders will be buying in most of their sustainable lifestyle from the industrial world. I've no problem with the basic idea. I just haven't come across any convincing examples.
So again, that depends fully on what your level of need is. There are people who live without any real input from, you know, big industry. Perhaps what? A bit of glass, some steel, some sheeting, some tin sheeting, or a bit of, you know, wood you can actually do yourself. It's a lot more involved. I mean, it's a correct critique, but that's sort of, you know, don't let, what's the saying? Don't let the perfect get in the way of the good kind of thing.
Yeah.
And in time, you know, I mean, like not far from me, there are small scale timber processes. There's a sawmill, and all these people have a similar kind of mindset. It's crazy that there's a sort of an alternate Telegram channel for around these parts. And there's a guy who's been doing this sort of stuff for quite some time, and he's got his own airfield. And it's just like, you would not expect people to be so far down the rabbit hole, but there are people that far down the rabbit hole waiting for it all to pop off. And they're all pretty self-sufficient. Like, yeah, a plane needs, significant engineering skill. But if you just happen to be that way inclined, you can manage all that yourself. It's just not everyone has that capacity, and that's probably a very rare example, but you know, it's a continuum, because people that are happy with just a wood stove boiler and a few lettuces and some eggs, they don't really have that many industrial requirements.
Yeah. Somebody asks, have you heard of Jim Gale, who is an expert in permaculture?
Jim Gale, no, not that name specifically.
Okay. And someone asks a rather embarrassing question. Do you have a process for transforming human waste into energy?
I have a septic system here, but there are multiple examples of composting toilets, and very easy to do. Yeah.
All right. Okay. Someone says, if you have a total ban on watching, reading and listening to media, both mainstream and non-mainstream, it's surprising how peaceful and crisis free life becomes.
Touche. Yeah.
I mean, this was a thing, especially during COVID. People often made the point, if you weren't watching, listening to the mainstream media,
you wouldn't even exist.
Yeah, you wouldn't know that anything was going on. You'd see people wearing masks and it'd be a bit strange. But other than that, you wouldn't have known. You wouldn't have known there was a so-called pandemic.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
All right. Here's a question that occurred to me earlier when you were talking about growing things. Do you have any interest in hydroponics?
I do have a big interest in it, and it's something I'd like to look into down the track. For me, it's just been a time kind of constraint, like not biting off more than I could chew and having endless projects on the go that never actually get kind of made good on. Yeah. But yeah, I think hydroponics is really interesting.
Yeah. All right. Someone asks about snakes and spiders.
New Zealand, we're boring as batshit. We don't have anything poisonous apart from our Prime Minister, to be honest. Yeah. Aussies, though, the Aussies and the Americans, yeah, you guys have got snakes to contend with. That's a thing for sure.
Yeah. Okay. And I guess that answers all the questions. Somebody did say this earlier on. Off-grid may not be viable in the long term. Global HOMO won't allow it. Bill Gates bought all the farmland in the US and BlackRock is buying all the housing stock. You'll own nothing and you'll be happy. Well, just to correct that, Bill Gates does not own all the farmland. I know that's a figure of speech, but I think he's the largest single owner of land. But yeah. So the point is, Global HOMO won't allow people to live off-grid. And what would you say about that?
I think it's an interesting thought experiment. So let's say everyone gets forced into the cities, right? Through a series of regulations and policies, you cannot own a holding, not even an acre. And it's all just high-rise apartments, eat the bugs kind of shit, right? That's the kind of dystopia that people think of when they're like, you can't even do your own thing anymore. I don't even think the cities will survive. Like, you've got worse things to think about if it really got to that point. It would just be horrible. And people would just be killing each other regardless, because it would be mass depression, mass congestion. I think the system itself wouldn't perpetuate for too long if they really got that like dictatorial and said, hey, we own everything. You're just some sort of consumer drone, no autonomy, no self-expression. I don't think the human spirit can take that for too long. So, yeah. And in the meantime, hey, my lifestyle still feels pretty good. Like, I see birds and it's nice and it's peaceful and the air is clean. I get to eat organic food. And yeah, it's work for sure, but life is all about trade-offs. What would I be doing? I often think about this. Like, what would I be doing otherwise? Well, I might go to the movie theater in town, or I might just wander aimlessly, or I might spend more time, I don't know, just kind of shoeboxed, you know, like there's only so many things you could do. To get away from that, you have to go to kind of where I am now. Endless kind of pontifications, I guess, can be made in that regard. And I get the point, and that's definitely like what they're trying to do. Like, there's no doubt that BlackRock and the financial sort of system in general is inflating and then bubbling and then destroying and sort of eating it all up. But yeah, I don't really have any power over that, that macro scale kind of shit, right?
Yeah, yeah. Somebody says, Terminus Est says, another skeptic, I live in farmland in Northern Europe, and if you want to slowly starve to death by accepting the ideas of off-gridders, then go ahead. The reality is that you'll need more than a dozen acres of quality land, to which you'll have to donate a lifetime of toil, and that of your children. Very much a skeptic there. He's talking about Northern Europe.
How far north? Are we talking like the frozen tundra? In which case, it might be true, but I don't find that. And plenty of other people in this region don't have that experience.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then someone else says, advances deriving from hydroponics has rendered growing your own food within reach of all Brit bongs, British people, even those residing on the 22nd floor in a tower block. Hydroponics enables you to circumvent the climate, really, I guess is what he's saying.
Yeah. There's some really fancy tech, and you're kind of like with vertical hydroponic systems where you're incorporating the water and the fish and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, you can, in theory, use your little pod townhouse to create a fair swag of protein or nutrient in general. Whether or not your building codes allow it, all the rest of it to be determined, I suppose. But in theory, yeah, like you look at some of the kind of prototypes or the setups that have been put together, and they're really impressive. And on a really small scale, you can produce a lot, which to my mind just makes you think, hey, why not just expand this in all directions?
Mm. Okay, and Velaki says, SteriPen for water purifying. I don't know what SteriPen is, but I think I can guess. Wonder Wash for no electricity washing. Outhouse for using your own waste with hay after 1 year. Berry bushes. Your own mini forest, half the area, for heating in a wood burner. Having your own pond for fishing. Guns? Thanks, guys. I don't know what the point he's making there, but he seems to enjoy the idea of going off-grid, at least.
Yeah, so a SteriPen is like a little UV, what do you call it? A UV bulb, and it's just powered by batteries. It's normally used for people that, I use them for camping. So you're wandering around, you got a couple liter bottle, you find a stream, you fill it up, you dunk your SteriPen in for 30 seconds or a minute, and it fully purifies it with UV. It's like a mini UV treatment system. And yeah, like that will save your life. I've used those in pretty dire situations and drunk some horrible shit and not got sick. So like, yeah, if you really wanted to just have a SteriPen at your house and with your water, your rainwater, excuse me, that would suffice. Yeah. And then he's just laid out some other cool options, really. Yeah.
Yeah. Wonder Wash and your own mini forest for heating and a wood burner. Very nice. Okay, here's a question. What security measures do you have in place? Once panic sets in, the masses will be looking to take whatever they can.
Yeah, right. So that's, again, end of the world scenario sort of stuff. I have reasonably good fencing. Where I am, everyone is of a like mind. You're right. If the masses had to exodus and it was just the zombie hordes, man, I don't know what you do about that. But at that point, it's kind of every man / woman for themselves. And I don't pretend to have a small, military garrison at the ready with all sorts of armaments to defend my patch. I mean, yeah, I have firearms. Am I allowed to use them because of our regulations? No. If shit was really hitting the fan, would I? Yes. But until that time, there's only so much you can do. And like, it's kind of more just like petty stuff that you worry about on the day-to-day until it all comes down, if it ever comes down. But sensible, to lock things up. Don't leave things out that look valuable, because people do pilfer from farmers because they know they're easy targets. They're not always around. They're often off, in the block. If you've got people that live with you, obviously make that known, more sort of presence around. Talk to your neighbors. If you've got neighbors that are close enough, have contact points. Have people that can come and check on your stuff. Usual common sense kind of tactics, I suppose. Yeah, you don't have to put booby traps in your driveway. You don't have to set landmines around your chicken coops. Like, yeah.
Okay, good. All right. I think that's probably all the questions that have come in. So thank you for that. And okay, Galileo's Tongue says, people seem to think off-grid means 100% independence. In reality, you can go as off-grid as you like in stages at whatever tempo you like.
Yep, so, correct. That's my take. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. And I think that's that. What I would like to do is read out the post that you wrote in my Telegram chat, just so that people get a summary of what you have achieved. Would that be okay with you?
Yeah, go for it. I don't even remember. It was a while back. Go for
okay.
It.
This was, yeah, it was. It was. It must have been at the start of this year, because you started with, I moved rural a year ago, New Zealand, 10 acres. It has come with costs in terms of tools and equipment, but I have my own cattle, have put in many fruit trees, and the vegetables I grow are returning value. It's definitely a fair bit of work until things become a bit more self-managing, but I personally find reward in that. That said, the value of my property on paper has also increased by $400,000. I also have a cottage on the property that I rent out. The place already had solar panels, and they generate income for 7 months of the year and cut electricity bills down a fair bit. Long term, it's a good proposition, and I'm paradoxically fortunate that the COVID madness has given the rationale for working from home, so I don't commute as much. I think it's very location and circumstance specific as to being a good choice or not. Some will love it and do well. For others, it could be a bad call. Doing it in groups is wise. For me, it has been worth the investment, and I don't have to see the great darkening of my home city get worse and worse. And then I must have asked you a question, and you said, we'll clarify. In the long daylight higher irradiance period from, say, mid-October to early May, I get paid on average $50 a month from solar generation. That is, it accounts for all electricity costs and puts extra money into my account. So the actual value is higher than $50 profit, as it also covers my usage. In the winter, I pay about $30 a month in power bills, so they subsidize but don't generate net profit. Note that winter usage is a fair bit higher too. Overall, I think it's a net profit maker, but probably not a huge amount. Should probably track the numbers a bit more autistically, but I try to focus on reducing unnecessary usage more than anything else, and the rest is what it is. And so I was obviously asking you about solar panels at the time, because it interests me. Well, the whole thing interests me about being self-sufficient, putting in place measures that will then take care of themselves and take care of the property and ultimately take care of you. And obviously there will always be maintenance necessary, but it's, I think the key thing here is that a life separate from all the society's systems is possible. I think that's the key thing that I want people to take away from this. And obviously it might not be possible in your circumstances or in your location, but definitely for some of us, it is possible. Would you like to say something to all of that?
No, I guess that's sort of that was then, and it's pretty similar now. The solar question, it's so, yeah, like location specific. It's not feasible for some people, but it's a great idea for others. And if, you know, is your property even connected to the grid in terms of, can you pump power back into it versus is it just self-contained? You know, all these things you got to think about. What kind of gear do you want to use? But the ultimate goal is twofold. One, to be not reliant on the grid, and two, to minimize expenditure. I mean, look at the cost of electricity in Europe now compared to when I wrote that. It's fucking bonkers from what I understand. I'm not sure if some of it's exaggerated, but it sounds insane. And yeah.
Now, from what I can see, it's real. I mean, everything is actually getting more expensive, not just electricity, not just energy. Mm. That's the other thing, growing your own food. Because food is getting more expensive as well. I mean, yes. Everything is. So you might say that's part of the Great Reset. You might say it's part of just incompetence. But either way, you want to be independent of it if you can be.
So when I look at the cost of, say, a steak, let's say it's a nice high-endish, mid-high-end ribeye steak, not, you know, cheap shit. Here in New Zealand, that will cost you around about, from a supermarket, say, one of the big three or four chain supermarkets, it's around about 30, 35 a kilo. Cheap stuff you can get about 20 maybe, but that's kind of the chewy shit. If you get it from a, you know, like a slightly more upmarket butcher, you're paying $50 a kilo or so, maybe more now. When I process a beast, I get, you know, if you're averaging it all out, I get high quality steak for around about $10 a kilo. And so it pays for itself. And you know where it's been, you know, it's had a really good life until like that half second it had a bullet through the brain. And I think it's kind of priceless, not just economically, but sort of, I don't know, holistically or life affirmingly. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, let's end it there then. I think this has been a very interesting chat. People were saying earlier on that you were giving out tons of practical advice and information. So I think this has had an effect, and I'm glad about that. So are there any final things you'd like to say just about the decision that you've made and the decision that other people might make?
Did you want to skim through those pictures at all?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about the pictures. Yeah, we can do that. Sure. Hold on a second. Here we go, and let me see how this works. Yeah, there we go.
So it was all bare grass at the start, and that's like the very beginnings of the orchard, part of the orchard, sorry. And then like less than 2 years, if you skim along, it's really come along. So that's the main water tank. There's a shed. There's some irrigation and piping I've put through just in case. Raised bed gardens. And that's like a slightly seasonal progression. You can see the wood chip mulch. And that was maybe, I don't know, a year or so ago.
All right. Just tell me. I'll skim through these and you can chat.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah. Just skim on through them. So you've got cherries, plums, nectarines, peaches. I've got an almond in there. The wood chip mulch pile grows. And like heavy harvests of plums already. And so I've tried to, you know, select carefully for throughout the grow season. So you have fruit from the start of spring to the very end of summer sort of thing. Feijoas, autumn, fruiting. Interplanting with things like comfrey to bring in the pollinators and the bees and to draw up nitrogen. All sort of permaculture principles. I've got an understory of berries, which I've got going now. It's like tea berries and raspberries. That's just a few pics of the orchard still. But multiple varieties, so there you get fruit, you know, all the way across. Raised beds, pretty self-explanatory. Strawberry patch, mint, kale. Oh, Cavallo Nero, sorry, it's a type of kale. And that was a dedicated blueberry patch I put in. So I put in like a base of peat to lower the pH, because blueberries are acid living. A lot of toil, like putting in a whole new bed, and you can see there was nothing there. And now it's like just cranking out the blueberries. And personally, I think blueberries are delicious and they're very good for you. So they say. And that's within a year. I have kilograms of blueberries.
That's amazing. And so you go from that, to that in a year.
They've been in there for one season. Yeah.
Amazing.
And blueberries are, I don't know what the cost is of blueberry in your neck of the woods, but they're really expensive.
Oh yeah, they are.
So I put in 26, and that's just like a little bit of harvest. I have grapes. I have an elderberry, and so I make jams like elder, grape, berry, plum mix, chutneys, jams. It feels good, man. It's a grapevine. into little starters, potatoes. I follow what's called the roost stout method, where you basically just like bury potatoes under a whole bunch of hay and they just come through and all pretty hands off. It's so cold here that you don't really get to grow citrus. So I grow citrus in half wine barrels, which I picked up. So I have limes and mandarins under like a little patio so the frost doesn't kill them, just to give me that, you know, additional variety. Basic compost made out of recycled pellets.
Right. So that's three. Do you want to talk about those three? Is that three stages?
Yeah, that's a three-bay compost. At the moment, I don't even need to put them in stages. I just throw it all in and pull out what I need to. But typically, you'd have it in stages. Yeah. So you'd let things sort of rot down, compost down, and then take from that and move it along.
Right. Okay. The composting is interesting. The process interests me. You just put in all this stuff, these bits, and refuse, and the ends of processes, and you put them all together, and then it breaks down and becomes something that's useful for fueling new processes.
Yeah, yeah, it's just speeding up the natural processes, really, of decomposition and recycling. Yeah. So I've made little wood stores. I have a, what we call it, wood burner in the house. So a little bit of tinkering. And I've normally harvest wood from just local areas. Like there's so much around here, it's just kind of free. It's just labor, you know, cutting, sawing, stacking. Nothing new, but it's just kind of my setup.
Those big cones there on the left.
Yeah. Yeah. Everyone has old pine row sort of shelter breaks and wind breaks, and so they're just constantly dropping their cones.
Right, okay.
Yeah. And I only have 5 chickens, but they lay plenty. I mean, I have more than enough eggs. I give away eggs. I'm not a hardcore chicken farmer. Is that what they call them? Chicken enthusiast. But I have a breed.
Chicken fancier.
Yeah. They're called Buff Orpingtons, and they're pretty well recognized of breed for being, you know, solid layers. I'm not au fait with like the autistic level of detail that people into chickens go into, but yeah.
Don't worry. Yeah. All right. We'll move forwards.
So that's just a day on the tractors. That's the main paddock. Cutting it down, drying it, and then turning it into hay. The hay goes in the shed. And then you've got feed through the winter when the grass is not growing. Like it's not rocket science. It's what people have been doing forever. But it's just my experience of it, I guess, because I was not brought up this way. I had to learn it all myself. Yeah.
And what do you do with this hay once it's like that?
So you put it on a trailer and then you put it into your storage shed. I think I've got a photo of it in the shed. And then throughout winter or whenever they need supplementary feed, like whenever there's not enough grass, you just bring it back out in 2, 3, 4 a day. And then that keeps the cows happy until the growing season.
All right.
And then your chickens hang out and lay their eggs in there because it's luxurious, apparently.
Yeah, it does look quite cozy. Yeah.
And that's my little herd.
All right, your homeboys.
Yeah, yeah. I called all them right. The Mujahideen. It was
like that's the kind of thing I would do. Oh, dear. All right.
And that was like, you can see the afterbirth there. That was my first homegrown cow, like actually had a calf. Yeah, so it was pretty sweet to see.
That's lovely.
And that's the hay going out. And that's processing a beast. So I get it all done like on the land. I call a guy in to help because I don't have facilities to process a cow. Like I could do my own sheep, but to process a cattle beast, it's just a bit laborious. So I'm not quite there yet on that front, but you know, there's enough local people that do it to keep it in the family, as it were. And then it turns into dinner for months and months and months. Like it's a good system.
Yeah, this is so that's all. It's very impressive. I mean, this is really impressive, even to someone, you know, as a layman. That this looks fantastic.
It's delicious too. I have.
Well, I don't mean the meat. I mean the whole thing. No. All of this project, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm sure it is delicious.
Thanks.
All right. So I guess we go back to this layout now. So thank you. That was 50 photos. So thank you for that. It's very comprehensive. All right. So I think that has, hopefully that will have been inspiring for people. So that someone's saying mega impressed. Someone asks, how long do you work each day? I guess that means in terms of all of this together.
Oh, like, so I still work basically full time. Which means I only have after hours on the land, and then I have weekends. So I don't spend all weekend doing that anymore. When I first showed up, yes, putting in all the trees, that took a lot of time. But now it's only harvest or prune or emergency periods that I actually have to do stuff. Otherwise, on the day-to-day, it's like I don't do anything for the cattle. They don't need anything through summer or spring. Or most of autumn. It's only really in winter when they need a bit of the hay to be fed out, but that takes like 10 minutes in the morning or the evening. Chickens need water, and that's kind of it, apart from, you know, one weekend through winter, say, when you're pruning your fruit trees down. But I find that enjoyable, you know, because you're seeing the results. But it's really not that much work. And I do it by myself. Like, imagine if you had a family.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine having a family. Yeah, like, this day and age, it's a strange thing. So that's next on the cards. But if you had people helping you is the point. More hands make light work, et cetera, et cetera. And if I can manage it, working a job and being not a particularly exceptional person to my estimations, then I feel like most people can manage it. So, yeah.
Well, some people in the chat do think you're quite an exceptional person. And one says, this guy is the real deal. Another one says, big respect, man.
Oh, well, so there thank we go. You. Appreciate
quite
it.
Nice comments. So, all right. Well, this has been great. I think you have inspired people. So is there anything else that you'd like to say in conclusion?
No, that's the main thing, right? Like a real life case study. I'm not the only one that does this sort of stuff. I hope people can think about it. Pursue it in whichever capacity you can. Talk to each other, the usual networking, you know, it's really, really important, even just for morale, you know, like, as we all know, it is easy to feel very isolated amongst all of the shit that's going on. But I think there's probably more of us out there than we think. And just, yeah, tap into the right networks and have some long-term thinking is probably really important. Don't let the kind of daily drudge just distract from like the long-term goals and results that you can achieve. That's kind of it. Yeah, just keep on keeping on, as they say, because it's important. Like, this is these are our lives and these are our societies, and it's quite obvious that they're being not too subtly attacked, and it sucks. So we should definitely do what we can to fight that and show some resolve.
Definitely. All right, well, this has been a very useful stream. As somebody said earlier, I think it was Padfa said, hold on a minute, with Whityard, Kate, and now Kiwi, this has been a very positive and constructive millennial night. Well, thank you very much. Oh, well, here's one quick question. Does New Zealand have WEF bullshit, World Economic Forum bullshit, going on in agriculture? Government deliberately coercing farmers to stop producing or otherwise buying them off the land?
Yeah, so we have this thing called SNAs, which is significant natural areas, where the government relatively arbitrarily says, hey, we want this land. I think it ties into the UN SDGs, SGDs, Sustainable Development Goals, where they just want to kind of, yeah, herd people away from this exact thing, basically. And they have the ability to do that. I mean, everyone knows that Cindy is a World Economic Forum global leader, like most of the other installed actors now running our countries. And so, yeah, the policies are getting put through. We have one called Three Waters, which is like a centralization of water management. We are in the process of having Maori co-governance, which will probably further erode this because it will give Maori specific racial, veto powers of decision making, and rights over resources that the rest of New Zealanders won't have. So yeah, it's all there. We're not immune to it here at all.
Well, no, I wouldn't expect you to be with Jacinda Ardern at the helm. Absolutely not. So, all right. Well, nonetheless, you are doing your own thing and it seems to be working out. And I'm really pleased for you. And I'm thankful that you came on Millennial and talked about this.
Hey, thanks for the invite. I hope it helped. I mean, obviously, I'm not waxing lyrical, like, as I mentioned, some of the stalwarts on big picture matters. I mean, I understand it all, but I don't have the background or the context. I can't give you a Sargon-esque diatribe on the way things are, or any of the other people that have been on.
Please don't.
Yeah.
All right. I'm just kidding. I don't hate Sargon, really. All right. Well, this has been a very useful stream. So that's something that I want Millennial to give people. So thanks again.
You're very welcome.
All right. Well, I'll be back in about 15, 20 minutes with the final stream for tonight. And that is the Prudentialist, if I'm not mistaken. Yes, it is. So I'll see you then. In the meantime, Kiwi Off-Gridder, Mark, thank you for appearing on Millennial.
You're welcome. Merry Christmas. And thank you for putting this on for another very successful Millennial.
Oh, thank you very much. I'll see you all soon. Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. The show must go on, but it needs your help. T-shirts and mugs and other wondrous gifts are available in the merchandise store. Impress your family, friends, colleagues, and business partners with these incredible items. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile blogger. Please help him continue. Until next time, enjoy the show. And spread the word.